Welcome into a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I am kicking off the show with Chris Temple, founder and editor of The National Investor. And Chris, let's start off by talking about just some more headlines and news around this U.S.-China trade war or potential trade deal. We heard from U.S. Treasury Secretary Mnuchin over the weekend that he was signaling that trade talks were getting close with China, but then we're also hearing reports that China might be loosening some of their, or the U.S. actually might be loosening some of their demands. So again, it's this back and forth, but from Mnuchin's comments, he does make it sound like, who knows, there could be a deal signed sometime soon. I know, it feels like we hear about that almost every week now. What do you have to say about the updates that came out of, I guess, the political sphere for trade?
Well, Corey, my base case, I guess, for lack of a better term to use, and the highest probability outcome continues to be that there will be some kind of a, and I think for markets that have gotten a bit too optimistic, it'll be an underwhelming type of deal, which will be more of a truce as opposed to an end of the trade war. There'll be concessions on both sides on merchandise trade, promises of some kind of enforcement mechanism on the part of both countries. That issue specifically has continued to be a stumbling block, which is why everybody involved has gone through a few promised deadlines in the recent past without a memorandum of understanding, which of course is what President Trump wants, to invite President Xi back to Florida to have a deal already signed. Already put together so that the two of them can officially sign it. So that base case continues to be the highest probability one, and that is of some underwhelming deal, mostly on merchandise trade, with promises of how to, you know, deal with all the rest of these thorny issues going forward. But make no mistake, there is no war between the U.S. and China that is going to end. These are the two largest countries and economies of significance in the world, number one. Number two, China is very active in different parts of the world, mostly in its own backyard, as a strategic and even military competitor or would-be competitor to the U.S. There continues to be a lot of wrangling over Huawei, the Chinese telecom company, and, you know, and frankly, from China's standpoint, I don't know how you make any deal at all without that issue being solved, if for no other reason that it's a matter of national pride to not appear to be dictated to by the U.S., but to be a legitimate equal partner. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, it's still any number of things. I think that once again, however, And this seems to change by the week, if not by the day, so who the hell knows what's going to happen. But President Trump, who for a while was going back to a more hawkish position after the Mueller report revealed the whole Russiagate thing for the hoax that it was, and that seemed to make him for a short time more hawkish, now he's flipping back the other direction, and he's so enamored with the idea that the stock market might exceed its old highs, and that he's really wearing that on his sleeve as, you know, an up or down vote on how good a job he's doing. Hey, right or wrong, the way to get the stock market to go higher is to come out with at least some kind of Mickey Mouse deal, even if it doesn't mean much. So that seems to be, again, where his primary motivation is. But stay tuned for next week. Maybe it'll change again.
Exactly. Well, as we said, it does kind of keep on flip-flopping here. But Chris, also, even if we do get a deal that isn't all that good of a deal and doesn't solve very many issues, do you think it frees up at least a little cash on the sidelines that companies have been a bit hesitant to inject into either the market or into spending because of just a complete lack of clarity? Could a even crappy deal provide at least a temporary sugar high for the markets?
Well, you conflated two different questions, and I'm going to break it up, Corey. Number one, markets, and number two, companies, as far as the economy is concerned. As far as the markets are concerned, you could get some added rally attempt in risk assets, not guaranteed, and many people, even bulls, have warned that when the deal, any deal is announced, you want to sell on that news. But you can't discount the possibility that if it's sold real hard by the parties involved, you could get one more leg up in stock prices. And especially if it exceeds the old highs, you will have, no matter the lack of fundamental justification, you probably would have portfolio managers under considerable pressure to pile on because they don't want to be left out. So you could get that short-term added boost maybe in the markets. Beyond that, though, when it comes to companies spending money and so forth, I don't see a considerable boost to the economic picture from that. I've pointed out before that if you were to look in a case of China specifically at the amount of money that supposedly would be saved or not incurred because of tariffs being rolled back or in some cases suspended, that amount of money, Corey, is overwhelmed by larger macroeconomic issues of China having to enact considerable and in some cases unprecedented monetary and fiscal stimulus both just to keep their economy from slowing even further. They got a little bit of a bounce recently from some of these measures, but I think even if you have to believe or concede that any kind of a deal announcement pretty much might cause markets to rally, I think the economic benefits of this on the ground have been especially greatly exaggerated. So we'll see what happens.
Exactly. But let's talk about the U.S. markets now, because considering they are almost at all-time highs, we're seeing a little bit of a pullback today, but still, these markets are within maybe a good day of trading, reaching these all-time highs. What do you think? Have they started to run too far? Finally, are people finally starting to question if this just general melt-up can continue?
Well, all else being equal, Corey, whenever you have a market at a place like this where you had all-time highs reached last year and in one fell swoop and then fairly quickly, investors gave back about 20% of the value of that when you had a brief, but I guess technically a cyclical bear market that lasted, you know, a couple of months or whatever it was, couple, 3 months. When you get back to the place at which the market fell, you're going to have a lot of overhead resistance. You're going to have a lot of people who didn't sell at the peak last year and have had to wait several months now just to get back to even, that don't want to tempt fate a second time and are going to want to sell. If the news is sufficient, maybe there'll be some people that'll want to take those shares off their hands. I don't know. But anytime you have a second top being reached like you do right now, it's not going to be easy to get above that because you've got a lot of people who didn't sell the first time that are going to want to sell now. So we'll see what happens. I mean, the Trump administration is trying to, you know, paint everything positively. Of course, the president's chief economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, he's always out there waxing bullish and saying, boy, like the president said, if only the Fed hadn't tightened policy so much, the Dow would be 5 or 10,000 points higher still. You know, Kudlow, of course, he'd be telling you to buy stocks if NASA announced today that an asteroid was going to hit the Earth next week. He'd find some reason to spin that into some bullish theme to buy stocks. So they're always going to give you that propaganda. And of course, today we saw Wall Street's propaganda machine really kick in this morning when it came to Goldman Sachs, which is one of the more egregious examples I've seen in a long time of how the initial headlines, in this case on CNBC, really gave you a head fake, which not everybody caught right away. I mean, when Goldman came out with their numbers this morning, Corey, the headline was that Goldman Sachs had beat estimates. Okay, everybody wants to beat estimates. And it took the Financial Times to tell you what the actual hard numbers were year over year. Yeah, Goldman Sachs may have beaten the numbers that Wall Street said that they were going to earn this quarter, but when you look at the hard numbers, their revenues for the first quarter were $8.8 billion. That's down 13% from the first quarter of last year. their net income fell 21% from the first quarter of last year. That's what is spun into, quote, beating estimates. So, you know, we'll see a lot of these attempts to put lipstick on a pig as we go forward through earnings season, like we, you know, always do these days. But the fact continues to be that without some real contortions and some real propaganda efforts to highlight what Wall Street expects as opposed to what hard numbers are year over year or even quarter after quarter, the fact remains that we are entering an earnings recession. And I don't think it's a question of if Wall Street will finally wake up to that, but it's more a question of when. And that's another reason why I would not be inclined to chase any last gasp of a rally attempt higher.
So does that mean that you'd be trying to play the short side here, or are you just more sitting on the sidelines waiting for a little bit more clarity?
Well, you know, I've already, with the models that I give to my members, Corey, we're already, you know, modestly, you know, net bullish stocks, not as much as I should have been in the recent past, to be sure. You know, and we've got a couple of small short ETF positions just to provide some ballast, and all that is done to this point, unfortunately, in 2019, is to reduce what our gains are elsewhere. But I'm looking, frankly, to a place where we get into the back end of earnings season and realize that things are going to slow considerably and that there's too much optimism baked in the stocks to probably go more toward a neutral, if not a net bearish position on the market. But I think it'd be foolish to do that even now. And I say that because, I mean, you look at all the stuff that is regularly put out there by the so-called perma bears. I don't ever want to tell people to do something like that. I mean, it's one thing to say that the fundamentals don't support the rally that we've seen, but we've seen so many times over the years where the Fed, in this case, the Fed, you know, not being a negative influence anymore and arguably flipping toward a positive one, and a lot of lingering liquidity out there, you've still got lots and lots of money managers with a whole lot more money than brains. And to fight the momentum that they create for the market, and do it chronically like the perma bears do, instead of trying to pick your spots, you know, that's just a fool's errand.
All right, Chris, we're going to leave it at that. Interesting comments to kick off the week. And I think this week, again, is just going to be dominated by this earnings season as we start to get some more news out. And we'll see how those markets react, if they can reach those all-time highs, or if we are in for a bit of a pullback and maybe a delay in all-time highs, or who knows, maybe more news will come out and maybe those all-time highs just will not happen. But Chris, good chatting with you. Thanks for taking some time today, and have a great rest of your day.